she wonderful? Isn't she precious? Such a beautiful soul.
I never thought that I would be son of someone as lovely as she. Isn't she lovely? She's my mom. Truly the angel's best. Boy, I'm so happy I have been heaven blessed.
I can't believe what God has done. I might be the luckiest son, but isn't she lovely?
Such a beautiful soul.
I can't believe I get to be son of someone as lovely as she. Isn't she lovely? She's my mom.
Isn't she lovely? She's my mom.
Right, a group called Anthem Lights. They're a court. They do such a great job. And of course, that song was written by Stevie Wonder and recorded different lyrics a little bit, but it was one of the most beautiful songs that he ever, sweet, sweet songs that he recorded. And of course, on this Mother's Day, imminently coming upon us here, I just thought that was the perfect thing to play. You know, God designed family, a father, mother, children, because he knew it was going to be the foundation of society, and because he knew out of those relationships would come the greatest blessing, the greatest security. Out of the security of the home, you can leave and go and be successful because you have that nurturing that you had as a child from that loving father and mother. You know, unfortunately, our world is broken, and too many people are not experiencing this, and this is all foreign to them. So today we're going to be talking not just about the bad, though, because I think that those of us that had good mothers, and I was one of them, should be able to freely celebrate this Mother's Day without any guilt. But we will also just stop to pause and think about others who are in a different situation. And it might be a time on Mother's Day too, like I think about in church, when all the mothers stand, they get carnations and all these things. And I remember when I was a younger mom and I had Sasha, who was severely disabled. She was in a wheelchair. And I was still a mom, but Mother's Day just brought me so much grief, you know. I was very serene, sweet, but painful, you know. And there are so many people around us that have various reasons, you know, estrangement from their families. I think that's maybe more painful than a disabled child. The estrangement that's happening now, and with Mother's Day approaching, there'll be a lot of people just really feeling the pain of that sharply. So we're going to enjoy Mother's Day, a celebration. We're going to talk about it, but we're also going to kind of touch on some of those situations. We're going to do it with Jessica Peck, who is a pediatric nurse practitioner. She's the host of Dr. Nurse Mama on AFR Talk. Jessica's just brilliant. She has the sweetest spirit, too, and she's got a great voice. I listen to those things. She's just great on radio, and she makes a great interview because she knows what she's talking about. So she's going to join me in just a few minutes, and we're going to talk about Mother's Day and just some of the problems and some things that maybe solutions if you find yourself in one of the categories that I just mentioned and others. Well, this is Sandy Rios, and you're listening to Sandy Rios 24/7. And I want to remind you that you can call us at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. We love to hear what you have to say. And you can also write us at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. We're available on the social media platforms. And so, and you can listen to the podcast on any podcast platform, and especially on afr.net. That's the mothership, AFR, American Family Radio.net. Mother's Day is one of the most beautiful moments of the year to share life-changing news. Maybe you've seen it, a family gathered around the table where someone stands up and says, "Next year there will be a brand new mom in our family." There's nothing like that. But for some women, Mother's Day feels very different. Instead of celebrating, they're carrying a secret, afraid, unsure, and alone. And that's why preborn exists. Because when a woman sees her baby on an ultrasound and hears that tiny heartbeat, it doubles the chance that she will choose life. This May, you can be the reason a scared young woman becomes a confident mom. Just $28 provides one ultrasound, and that's less than a dollar a day. Preborn empowers women to be moms. And it's only the beginning, because that moment leads to real support, maternity care, baby clothes, diapers, counseling, and so much more. And that is what we do together when we provide ultrasounds. To get involved, just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy, and make your most generous donation. All right, well, you're in for a treat today. And so just pour a cup of coffee, a Diet Coke, or whatever. Drive in your car safely, please. And just have the privilege of listening to Jessica Peck talking about family and children and Mother's Day on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
I do want to encourage you to not strive for perfection in your parenting. Just consistency. Just pick what it is that you want to do, that you want to be faithful about and consistent about with your children, whether it's baking bread. You decide, I want to bake bread so my kids can remember the smell of bread baking. You don't have to be perfect at it. Just decide if that's what you want to do. Just do it. If it's that you want to have a meal around a table, pick the two nights a week. This week you can get it done and do it. If it's that you want to have devotions, do it. Just start, and you don't have to be perfect, but your kids will remember whatever it is that you're doing consistently and faithfully. And that's what we had growing up. I will say that it wasn't perfection. It was consistent, intentional parents. And I'm so grateful for that now. Your kids will be too. If you're on the other side of raising your children and you feel maybe a little discouraged because you're looking back and you're thinking, man, there are so many things I would have done differently. Well, welcome to the club. There are so many things that all of us as parents look back and would have done differently. But it's okay, because the Holy Spirit's got you covered. There's grace and mercy that is sufficient for all of our weaknesses and our shortcomings and our frailty. And I'm so grateful for that for my own life. And I'm grateful for that for yours as well.
That's Priscilla Shire. She's not our guest today, but I just thought that was a beautiful reminder to all of us moms. I could relate to everything she said. I have two children. I have a lot of regrets about things I've done. You know, when I look at, my first daughter is no longer with us, but my son, I just think of things I wish. It kind of grieves me. I wish I'd done things differently. Well, you may be feeling that way, or you may be looking at Mother's Day as just a complete celebration. But some of you might have broken relationships with your mom. Some of you, like me, your mother is gone. She's in heaven, or she might not be in heaven, but she's gone. So Mother's Day reminds you of that. So like Christmas and Thanksgiving and all those holidays, I think Mother's Day is a mixed bag. It can bring grief and it can bring joy. So we're going to talk about, as much as we can, about just how to think about our children and Mother's Day and mothering and all of that. And I've asked really Jessica Peck to join me. She's a pediatric nurse practitioner. She is a professor actually at Baylor University. And she hosts a show on AFR Talk called Dr. Nurse Mama. And I had the privilege of being her guest a few months ago. And she was so delightful that I've been meaning to have her on the show. She's the author of Behind Closed Doors. It's a book, a guide to help parents and teens navigate through life's toughest issues. And with that, I want to introduce or just say hi to Jessica. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning, Sandy. Thank you so much for inviting me to be with you and your listeners today. It was such a joy to talk with you, and I'm honored to be back for another conversation.
Well, as I understand it, it's an interesting really thing about you. You had a mother. You also had four kids. You have four kids, four teens?
That's right. They are now young adults and teenagers. But yes, I did have four teenagers at one time, which people would give me, you know, instantaneous kind of sympathetic head tilts and instant prayers. But I love having teens and young adults. It's got to be one of my favorite stages of mothering yet, actually.
You know, I enjoyed that too. My son used to bring his buddies over. Mm-hmm. And they were just fun. We had just had fun. And my son was not rebellious. He was, well, there are other things, but he wasn't rebellious. And we had a really nice time together. And I was a single mom. But so let's talk about a lot of moms on Mother's Day are reflecting on their parenthood, reflecting on their own mothers. And when you look back, I know that you had a little bit of, you know, some stress and sorrow in your growing up. This is a hard question because it's so broad, but tell us about your relationship with your own mother.
Oh, Sandy, you're so right. That Mother's Day is so complicated for so many people. And for those mothers out there who it's not complicated and they are just loving life and in a healthy family, like, celebrate that and hold that high for the rest of us to look at as aspirational, to know that it is possible to work toward that and attain that. Because there's so many other mothers, as you said, Sandy, you know, just loss, grief, brokenness. And that was my own story. I really come from a family that was severely impacted by generational dysfunction, generational trauma, relational brokenness, and especially between mother-daughter relationships. You know, all of the mothers and grandmothers in my family tree, they all had babies very young, so I was fortunate to have them around for a long time. But so I look back and I knew several generations. I can go back five generations in my lifetime. And all of those mother-daughter relationships were just very strained, very fractured. And it actually wasn't until I was in nurse practitioner school, and it was right around the turn of the century when scientists were mapping the human genome for the first time and mapping out DNA. And we were really broadening the way that we look at heredity and patterns of the things you inherit. And I was sitting in a class one day and I was doing a family tree, and we looked at things like heart disease and cancer and strokes and things like that that we've looked at for a long time. But then our instructor told us to look at things like mental health, anxiety, depression, suicide, broken relationships. And honestly, Sandy, I was so grieved to look at my family tree and see that really the strangling vine in my family tree was addiction. And even though every branch was not impacted by substance or alcohol addiction, what I learned was that with any kind of addiction or really other kinds of trauma or abuse, there are inherited family dysfunctional patterns of relating. And these are very specific and well-studied. Things like triangulation, where you have a habit of, you don't go straight to the person you have a conflict with. You go to a third party and you have all of these complicated dynamics. I mean, there's so many well-studied patterns like that. And I discovered that my family, you know, there were some in my family who really tried their best and thought, okay, we are not going to drink at all. We are not going to have that problem. But we didn't know how to unlearn and relearn healthy ways of relationships. And that's a really tough pattern. And once I saw that, I decided that I was going to be different, that I was going to beg God to make me a chain breaker, to make me a trailblazer. And that is really what he has been faithful to do in my life.
You know, I have something similar, but different. My father was probably the most dysfunctional parent I had, although I loved him. But he came from a family with a long line of meanness and trouble, setting people against each other, and unkindness. And then he was picked on, and so then he, like, you know, carried on the picking on to his children, his wife. But it was, and I'm probably understating, but when I think of my own family, I think of my son, and I think of, let's just say I was divorced, and there were patterns in his dad that I did not want to see repeated. And when we I really concentrate on that, Jessica. I said, because God gives me strength, we're going to reverse this thing. And so I think we did. I mean, I just didn't think it would be possible. It was like pushing against a huge boulder, but it can be done, can't it?
It can. And you know, it is so hard to live in patterns of generational brokenness. It is so hard. There was one time specifically, Sandy, and it wasn't easy for me, by the way. I definitely had a very long and difficult road. And as I started out in my mothering journey, I was so anxious and so fearful. And I really made my children have the job of giving me instant gratification. I wanted to control their behavior because that was the instant feedback loop that I needed to say I was doing what I set out to do, that I had broken the trauma and that I was being a good mom. And it didn't work. And one day I was on the phone with a family member and having a repeated pattern of conflict. And I was crying, like bawling my eyes out, you know, like very, very unattractive, you know, where you're just, your face is red and puffy. And I was sitting on the phone, on the recliner, and my husband came out with a digital camera. This was before smartphones. And he took a picture of me in that moment. And I was so angry. I was like, what are you doing? And he was so loving, Sandy. And he turned the picture around, the camera around, so I could see the picture. And he said, honey, this is what our kids are seeing every day. They're seeing you grieve the life that you will never have while you're watching the life that you do have pass you by. And I was so obsessed with fixing that relationship with, you know, my mom, with my broken family. And I realized I was going to have to surrender that. And I was going to have to let that go. And the Lord put on my heart a verse from Psalm 84:11. The Lord God is a sun and a shield. He gives grace and glory. No good thing does he withhold from those who walk uprightly. And while I thought restoration with my mom, with my family, was a good thing, how could God not want that? God saw that I needed space to break those chains. I needed boundaries. I needed sun. He was a sun. He was a light to my path. He was a shield. He protected me from some of those dysfunctional patterns. And I really had to surrender that. And it wasn't until my oldest daughter was about 13 that all of this happened. And I realized I needed a new mindset and a new skill set. And Sandy, this was very humbling for me because I had been working as a pediatric nurse practitioner for over a decade. And here I was helping people with their families every day thinking, well, try it out. I hope it works for you. It's not going so well for me. But I realized that it was so holistic in nature. Yes, I had that professional skill set, but without the humility, without the surrender to the Lord, without the daily dependence on God, without the spiritual renewal, none of that was going to matter. And God has been faithful, faithful, faithful. And really now my daughters are in college and I'm so blessed every day. They call me their best friend. They're adults. We can do that now. And you know, my sons in the same way as they're growing up, and I will shout it from the mountaintops and share what I have learned, which is one of the reasons why I wrote the book, why I host the show, just to say, hey, I haven't figured out all of the answers, but I found the courage to say that I haven't. And I have found the Lord's calling in my life to share the hope and help that I have found along the way.
You know, I don't doubt that about you at all, Jessica. I mean, I've heard you, and you really do have a gift. You have an insight and a humility and great intellect. So God is using you, and he will continue to do that. I think there may be times, I should put this as a question, there may be times when we have to withdraw from family members that are really bad for us. And that's hard for Christians because we're taught, you know, to respect, for now, the issue of parents, respect our parents, and that family is so important. And so when we get into that position of where we just, it's like poison to be around a family member, you know, you just do wonder what the right thing is to do. How did you kind of resolve that in your own mind?
Oh, Sandy, that's a good question and a really hard one. And I think that cancel culture is real. I do think that people are too quick to unfriend, to unfollow, to just ghost someone and just be really quick to not want any discomfort of conflict and to say, you know, just, I have to put up a boundary And really, it's more of a conflict avoidal stance, like you just don't want to walk through the messiness of that. Because so often around us, we have relationships that are easier, relationships that are more low maintenance. And so I do want to say that. But there is also, on the other side, there are appropriate ways to put, and situations where you need to put up boundaries. And the book Boundaries actually was really helpful to me in doing that. But how I navigated that, Sandy, is that I did not put up boundaries in isolation. I had to reach out for help. So I did not just do that out of my own decision, my own wisdom. I was in therapy. I went to a Christian counselor. I walked with, you know, that counselor regularly through that journey. I sought the counsel of my pastor. I sought the advice and prayers of my life group that I was going through, and really sought wise spiritual counsel to see, okay, as far as it depends on me, I'm to live peaceably with others. And so yeah. Have I made every effort possible for conflict resolution? But ultimately, Sandy, I think that the tipping point is that as a mom, you have an emotional tank, and you only have a finite amount of emotional and mental and physical and spiritual energy. And when you have conflict, that conflict costs you something. And some relationships are so emotionally expensive, much as, like I told you, sitting on the recliner, I realized that I needed to reserve some of that for my children. And so I would think about, okay, these are the cost that I can bear here. Here's the emotional expense that I can bear. But I really recognized that my primary responsibility around that time was my children, and they needed my full insight and energy. And if I'm trying to recover from a conflict for a week, that's not going to serve them well. And so really it was professional counseling, biblical counseling, the counsel of wise Christian friends that helped me walk through that. It took some transparency. It took courage to be brave and to say, hey, you think my life looks perfect? Well, let me show you what it looks like behind closed doors. This is not perfect, but both paths are hard. One path leads to destruction. The other path leads to life. So I'm going to take the hard path that leads to life, that leads to bearing fruit, that leads to redemption, that leads to wholeness. And I'm still praying for relationship restoration.
I get all of that. By the way, your book is called Behind Closed
That's
Doors.
Right.
And so it's true that everyone in their families, although I have some friends who it just seems like they're a long time friends, that they just have almost perfection in their family and their children. It's pretty amazing to me. I was like, well, how did you do that? But there is no question, Jessica, let me just emphasize what you said, but Jesus is the secret sauce in all of our broken relationships, and our good ones for that matter. Mm-hmm. I just see that with my, you know, you don't know, but I've been married to my second husband for 17 years now, and he wasn't a Christian when I met him. Mm-hmm. But, oh my goodness, did that change? And I can't believe what a difference it makes that your husband has that same faith that you have, and that you can be honest with each other. You can actually hurt each other in your honesty, and there's just a beautiful thing that happens with God. So let's talk about teens, because, you know, there are a lot of parents mm-hmm. listening who have teenagers. You mentioned that earlier. And if you don't mind, I'm going to read a little bit of something you wrote in your introduction. Okay?
Sure. Okay.
And you say, I was in the driver's seat of my car having a recurrent and heated argument with my then 13-year-old daughter, who was in the back seat when it happened. Something heavy whooshed past my shoulder, centimeters from my face. To my utter amazement, in anger, she had thrown the book she was reading right at my face while I was driving. My mind raced a million miles an hour in shock as I frantically pulled over. What in the world? Surely my adored and angelic daughter did not just hurl a book at my head. How could more than a decade of painstaking parenting effort with my expertise as a pediatric nurse practitioner arrive at this rude awakening? Days before, she had left a handwritten manifesto on my pillow outlining my many shortcomings in painstaking detail. I didn't give her enough freedom to choose her clothes or friends. I was strict, mean, uncaring. I didn't trust her. I embarrassed her. But most of all, I didn't understand the challenges that she was facing in modern times, as I was raised in a literally in literally the previous century, she said. All right, so, yeah, that's an imperfect story, Jessica.
It was a perfect reading, though.
Thank you very much. Well, I had a 13-year-old son, but well, I remember I have a lot of words, so I can be, as God helps me, kind and use my mouth to his glory, but I'm real capable of the other. And when I was about that age, I remember just saying the most horrible things to my mother, just like poison out of my mouth. And she was so kind, and my mother just slapped me. And I started crying, and I said, Mother, thank you. Thank you. I needed to have that poison the reality of that poison taken out of me. Anyway, what happened with your daughter in that instance? Did you guys talk things through? What changed?
Well, I pulled over to the side of the road, and I did the only thing that I knew to do. I prayed. I prayed through my tears. It was a point of brokenness, and that is the point that God really called me to surrender all of the control that I had tried to put on her for 13 years. And I have to take accountability for that, Sandy. I was not equipped to be the best mother that I could be. And I realized that I had to learn how to be transparent with my brokenness. I had to learn how my perspective was so different in seeing things through the lens of my own relational trauma that she didn't yet have, but then I was giving to her. And I realized that I needed to be very intentional about cultivating a new mindset and a new skill set. So I started reading every book I could get my hands on about mothering. I started seeking out mentors among the godly women who I knew, and I would take them out to lunch and tell them, give me advice. Tell me, you know, what you have learned in your mothering journey. I started journaling about that. I started, you know, really opening up about some of my insecurities, so many things that I had tried to handle on my own. I really learned to go to the Lord during that time. And instead of trying to fix it with a professional life hack that I had or a communication technique, I would just give everything to the Lord. And I started doing four things that were really transformational. First, I started praying a lot more. All day, every day, throughout my day, I would open my eyes and it would just be a continued conversation with the Lord till I went to bed. I made prayer very natural. I would say, pray out loud, God, help my kids not to be so frustrating. And I would hear their sweet little voices back saying, God, help mama not to be so frustrated. And we would just pray back and forth. The second thing that I did was start memorizing scripture like it was my lifeline. And I started speaking that over them, asking God to speak that over my heart. He gave me wisdom. He gave me the tools that I needed. Third thing was being plugged into a church. We were there all the time. I was just always wanting to walk in fellowship and introduce my kids to other people who would affirm, you know, that the worldview that I was trying to present, who would love on my kids and help show me ways that I was broken. And I started learning from other mothering styles. And the fourth thing that was really powerful, and I know you'll really like this, Sandy, I started using music as a temperature, as a thermometer in my home, as a thermostat, because I would start cultivating worship playlists that were specific to the struggle that we were having that week. If we were feeling defeated, it was the victory playlist. If we were feeling like, who am I? I'm feeling really down on myself. It's an identity playlist. And really having those messages, many of those songs are just straight scripture, and having those pour over my heart and in our home and learning to help regulate that temperature, those were things that were really a starting point for me. Not, you know, getting this certification as a parenting coach or going to a parenting class or learning, you know, how to talk. All of those things came later. It was really those core four spiritual disciplines and that daily surrender to the Lord that was the beginning of a transformation.
And so how did that transformation work out? You had four kids, mm-hmm. and now you say they're young adults, but mm-hmm. how did that go? Did you make the transition? Were you able to bring peace with you and your kids?
I have no greater joy than to know my children are walking in the truth. And Sandy, I will tell you with all honesty and transparency, we have the most wonderful, beautiful relationship I could have ever imagined. God did exceedingly more than all that I could ask or imagine. He is a good father who loves to give good gifts to his children. And my children are literally my favorite people on the face of the planet, along with my husband, of course. And I love spending time with them. They love spending time with me. I talk to each one of my children every single day. We have a very healthy relationship that is not perfect. We still have conflict. We still disagree. We still hurt each other's feelings. But we know now how to repair that. And actually, I'll tell you, Sandy, just last month, my oldest daughter and I, we spoke together at a parenting conference and shared our perspective. And it was glorious, so beautiful. And she's actually been on the show with me several times on my show. So if listeners want to hear more of just our transparent conversation where we talk more about that, like, hey, here's what we did right and here's what we did wrong. There's so much freedom and grace in that. And Sandy, I would not change it for the world.
Yeah, I hear you. Let me remind you that you can hear Jessica on American Family Radio. It's Dr. Nurse Mama on AFR Talk. Dr. Nurse Mama. Well, you know what? We're talking about some good endings here, and some maybe that's success that others cannot relate to. And I bet you would agree with me that part of the uphill battle right now for parents, I don't know how parents do it now, and that's social media, phones.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Do you have some good advice to parents on how to handle that?
I do. I talk about this every single day. And actually on the show every Friday, I do a series called 52 Habits for Healthy Families. And we walk through all of these habits and I have lots of, we talk about this a lot more in depth. But for here, for now, Sandy, what I would say is that there's nothing new under the sun. Solomon said that, and it is true. And while the tactics and the technology that the enemy used are new, the underlying heart issues, the sin issues, the brokenness of the world, those things are a tale as old as time. And we cannot, as parents, adopt a fear-based status. Just have our hearts gripped with fear. The enemy comes to steal, to kill, to destroy. We cannot let him have that victory in our lives. We have to be faith informed and know that God has put us on this planet for such a time as this, even in the 21st century, even with social media, even with childhoods that look dramatically different than our own, even in an age where the Jetsons are coming to life and it feels like every day there's something new to be afraid
of. Yes, flying cars. I just read they have flying. Could you see that? They're developing
them
in California.
Who could believe? But God has not given us a spirit of fear, Sandy, but a power and love and a sound mind. And I am convinced that in the context of healthy relationships in the family, in the nuclear family, especially in the home, although all a kid needs is a meaningful connection to one invested adult in their life to have resilience for whatever traumas, trials, tragedy come their way. I'm convinced that in the context of healthy relationships, there is no challenge. There is nothing the enemy can throw at us that we cannot handle together. And we are more than overcomers. We are more than conquerors in Christ.
My husband used to be, oh, amen to that, by the way. My husband is a retired FBI agent. So he was a polygrapher for some of those years, probably five. And so he used to come home, and without telling me anybody, of course, give me any details, he would tell me the most bizarre stories about what people, you know, what he learned about people in those polygraphs. And so my question to you is, you know, with all of your years of practice and all the people you've interacted with, mm-hmm. what is the, if you can tell it, the strangest situation you ever, that came before you?
Oh my goodness. You know, some of my friends tell me that I should write a book called, you know, You Can't Make This Stuff Up. Honestly,
I like
Sandy,
that.
Yeah, it would be hard to say, like, pinpoint the strangest situation. I guess one that comes to mind is I had a family on a pediatric unit who had a child who was having having some severe emotional trauma. And what I learned and what I know now is that emotional and psychological trauma manifests itself as physical symptoms. And when people find out that it's trauma, they think, oh, well, then those physical symptoms must not be real. But they are very real, because that is the way that God has designed our bodies to process emotional, mental, and psychological trauma through our physical bodies. It's called somatization, and it happens. But it is really a hard concept for people to grasp. And it's a sign that God has given us, saying, you need some help here. We need to pay attention to these distress signals that are going. And
okay, let me jump in just a sec. Are you talking about things like bulimia or anorexia, just not eating or eating too much? Are those symptoms of a deeper problem?
I don't want
you to talk about those, but I'm asking you if that's an illustration.
That's a really great question. No, I'm even talking about things as simple as headaches and back pain and tummy aches and shakiness, and things that parents come in to see me and say, oh, is this a blood sugar issue, or do they have the flu, or, you know, do they have diabetes or something like that? And really, many, many times, and increasingly so in the last few years, as we just see a generation that's been severely traumatized by social media, by COVID lockdowns, by just all of the ways that the world is moving at the speed of a smartphone, by being exposed to things that they are not ready to be exposed to. We have a generation of children who are generally traumatized. And so I've encountered some strange situations. One, I was trying to explain to the family that there was nothing physically wrong, like cancer or heart disease or, you know, things that they worry about like that. And the next thing I knew, Sandy, I heard this chanting and singing, and I smelled incense, and they had brought a priest to do an exorcism right there because they thought it was an evil spirit. And I had a new grad nurse who was training that day, and that was definitely a challenging situation to navigate. But
what was that in your office?
That was in a hospital. That was in hospital. Yeah. Okay. And on the pediatric unit. But it's a good reminder to me that God made us body, mind, and spirit. We are not just physical. We're not just emotional. We're not just mental. Health, you know, we have all of those things that make us up together. And that's one of the things I love about being a nurse practitioner, is recognizing those holistic connections. And it's been a really big part of my own healing journey, and recognizing that we can't separate those things into silos. You can't just treat depression in isolation. You got to look at your physical health, how you're eating, how you're sleeping, how you're moving your body, and what spiritual connections you're getting. You know, those things are all intertwined. And I love being able to equip parents and families for holistic health, because it helps everything.
What is the one thing, person, family that you helped that stands out, makes you smile, makes your heart beat a little faster because you feel you really made a difference in their lives?
Oh, that's another great question, Sandy. There are so many. I love being able to do what I do. There's one mom in particular where I helped her when her baby was a newborn. I helped her with some things that she was going through. And that baby has her own baby. You know, she's graduated from college. But anytime I see this woman in the grocery store walking down the street of the community, she will stop what she's doing. She will get out of her car. She will run over and yell to everyone listening, "This woman saved my life." And I think, no, but for the grace of God, but for the grace of God. But I will say that one thing that comes to mind, and there are so many, there are so many. After I wrote my book, there was one chapter that I wrote specifically about divorce. And at the end of every chapter, I encourage and equip families to write what I call a legacy letter. I think letters are really important for kids to be able to pour over the words that you say, not have any pressure to say anything back if you're delivering something verbally. And so one of the letters that I had proposed for families who are going through divorce was to write a letter to your child telling them the characteristics that were in their other parent who was divorced that you like and that you appreciate. And I had this one mom write into me, and she said that she felt very convicted by the Lord to do this, but she did not want to because she had so much bitterness towards her ex-husband. He had really harmed their family in so many ways. But she did it, and she wrote that and gave it to her preteen son. And she didn't hear anything back. He didn't give her any, "Oh, thanks, Mom. That was so great." Nothing. But a few weeks later, he came to her and he told her that he was so appreciative that she had done that because he was convinced that she hated his father, and because he was half his father, that she hated him. And she hated those things that were, and she was afraid of those things that would be like his father. And this boy shared with her that he was so at the point of desperation that he was thinking of ending his life. But sorry, I'm going to get emotional.
Goodness.
But his mother gave him that letter and showed him that, you know, even though his father was so hurtful in so many ways, that there was some good, and that even though he was biologically his, he shared his DNA, that he could hold on to those good things of his father, and that he could change that legacy and amplify those characteristics going forward. And, you know, I don't take any credit for that, Sandy. That is all the Lord. That is all obedience to God and God giving you a conviction on your heart. And how many times have you felt the Lord tell you to do something uncomfortable, to, you know, do something you're thinking, no, Lord, really, I don't want to do that. But when you do, yeah, but
lot,
when you
actually
do, God works, he moves, and he invites us into his work every single day. And he's inviting parents to be part of that. That's your most important legacy that you have, is the legacy that you're leaving in your home. And I just, that's why those core four spiritual disciplines, learning to know that my father's voice, learning to know God's voice, and to move when he says to move, to be still when he says to be still, to know all of those things. It has been just the greatest redemption in my life.
Beautiful. Well, on the issue of divorce, I got divorced when my son was 10. And I felt very strongly that I could not tell him why. You know, I couldn't, couldn't spell it out. I couldn't. He was too young. And what I experienced was that he got really disturbed, because he thought that I was mistreating his dad when I asked him to leave. And he was angry with me. I finally had to sit down and in very careful terms, because we were Christians, and my son understood that he was raised in the church. And I just laid out some things for him without being in detail and said, "That's the reason, honey. That's the reason." And he just relaxed. I could just see his whole body relaxing, because it was congruent with our faith, and he understood. And I think, actually, my personal opinion is that that's the best thing to do, to try to... I think a lot of people won't say anything to their children, at least traditionally they wouldn't. Now, a lot of times, now I think women say too much. They destroy the fathers.
On social media.
Yeah, yes, they destroy, but... Maybe my concerns don't apply anymore about not telling. But for years, people didn't talk to their children. They just said, "We're getting a divorce, and we don't like each other anymore. We're going our separate ways, whatever." What are your thoughts about the need to explain something to your children?
You know, Sandy, I remember reading about this in your book, and I remember, as I was reading it, having so much admiration for the decision that you made, that you were not going to malign your son's father in public, that you were not going to be bitter, that you were just not going to do that. And I think that kids are so much more aware than we think that they are, and we absolutely need to talk to them. You need help in giving them the right amount of information at the right time in a developmentally appropriate way. Kids process this very differently depending on what stage of life they're in. So for example, school-age children are programmed to think very much like law and justice, and they think that their actions cause reactions. So most kids that age are going to feel some degree of guilt, like, I did something to cause this. Oh, teenagers are going to react much differently, because they lose all the control. They lose control of where they live, who, you know, what rules are in each household, where they go to school, who their new step parents will be. And so many times they seek to have control over other things that they can control. A lot of times that includes what they can eat. And so that can lead to, you know, a path that is destructive and coping. So I think it's really important to be honest with kids and to always tell them, you can always come to me with any questions that you have, and I will do my very best to answer them. And if I can't answer them, I'll tell you that I can't answer it. And if I can, for any reason, I'll tell you why. The other thing that I think that is really important, Sandy, is I see a lot of kids who feel a lot of burden. They don't feel like they can talk to one parent about struggles they're having with the other parent, because it triggers so much conflict and it can be hurtful even. So I think for parents who are divorced, cultivating a safe group of adults around them to say, this is a safe person that you can go to and you can talk to if you feel like you can't talk to me. And then of course, for me as the parent, I would have a conversation with that other adult and say, here's what I want to know, what I don't want to know, and I'm putting a lot of trust in you. But I think building a village for your family is really important. And actually, I'll say this really quick. There are certain people in the village that you should have. You need an intercessor, someone who will pray for you at the drop of a hat, who you can text to say, or call and just say, pray for me, and they'll pray, no questions, no judgment. You need a counselor. Now, whether that is a professional counselor, whether that's just someone with wise biblical counsel, someone who's not going to just tell you what you want to hear, someone who's going to give you tough truths and call out things when they see them and give you wise advice. You also need a good healthcare provider, someone you trust with your life, someone you can take your kids to and say, all right, they're acting out. What should I do? Where is this fall on the scale of normal human emotion to dysfunctional coping? And what can I do? You need somebody who shares and honors your worldview. You need a ride or die, somebody who is just going to be there. You can call at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, hey, can you bring half a cup of vinegar and a shovel and, you know, like a old beach towel? And they'll be like, sure, yeah, I'll be over in 5 minutes. And the last one I think that you need is someone in the same boat. You need to connect your kids. Sometimes that's through divorce care. That's a great ministry that has. But kids who are going through divorce, they need to be around other families who are experiencing the same thing. And that's true whether your kid has a chronic illness, whether they are moving, they're in the military. Those are the five people that I think all parents need to cultivate and identify specifically for your child. Here's the person who can pray for you. Here's the person to go to for advice. Here's where we go when we're sick or hurt. Here's the person who's going to love you no matter what. And here's the person who understands what you're going through. If you cultivate that kind of village around your child, I think that's a really powerful building ground for the seeds of resilience.
Yeah, I like that. I want to, one last thing, because you know, sure. What? We could go on forever.
I know we could, couldn't we?
This is the week before Mother's Day.
Yes.
And it reminds me of a certain category of people that this must be very difficult for, Jessica, mm-hmm. And that's families who are in the middle of transgender children, gender confused. Some have left and married someone of their opposite gender. You know, just all the different combinations. Do you have any? Well, let's go for the parents' route. Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions for? No, let's go the child route. Mm-hmm. Let's see. That's not going to work either. All right. So I'm sorry. I'm thinking about all this stuff in my head.
It's complicated.
How about Mother's Day, you know, with a child like that? Mm-hmm. Do you bring them into your home, ask them to church? What do you do?
There are so many ways that there can be brokenness in Mother's Day. And you just brought up one example of that. I know many, even of my peers who maybe their parents have transitioned and it's not their mother or father
yeah.
now. You know, I mean, there's so many ways that you mm-hmm. could look at that. And I think of so many other ways that Mother's Day can be broken. You know, you have people who are grieving their mothers who have died, as you said before, or people who are grieving their mothers who are physically present but emotionally absent, or those who have brokenness, or those who long to be mothers and are not yet
right.
mothers.
Well, that's another pain, given. Yes.
Yes, there's so many ways of pain. There's single moms who often feel, you know, the weight of everything they carry alone. There's no one to affirm them and to see the everyday work of their mothering. I mean, there's just so many ways that Mother's Day can be very broken. And whatever kind of brokenness you find yourself in, I think that we can choose gratitude. We can think about the women in our life who mothered us in the moments that we needed us. We can think, if you're grieving loss, you can think about honoring a maternal memory with gratitude for a gift that is so great that it is worth grieving. That is a beautiful thing to have. And Mother's Day really doesn't demand that we ignore those emotions or kind of gloss over the complications that are around those. But we do have a choice in how we will face the day. And I can think, think in my early Mother's Day journey, oh my goodness, Sandy, I ruined it. I would make my family so miserable because I would say, oh, I don't care what you do. You know, just it's just enough for me to be a mom. I'm so grateful. But I really didn't choose that. Really, what I was saying was, okay, you better get the perfect gift. You better bring me breakfast in bed with a card because that's my report card. If you give me this social media swoon worthy Mother's Day, and if everything looks perfect on that day, then that must mean I'm a good mother, I'm a good daughter, you know, whatever that is. And I just really had to choose a different mindset and to choose grit and grace and gratitude and whatever the day would bring. And actually, Sandy, the first time that I did this, I told my husband, this is going to sound really crazy and people are going to say, I would never do that. But I decided that on this first Mother's Day that we're going to do differently, my kids were really young. And I said, you know what? I want to go to Chuck E. Cheese on Mother's Day. And he said, what? And I said, you know, my kids are really happy there. They play. I want to see them happy. And I just want to do something to have fun with them because, you know, I had just had so much brokenness, even thinking of my own mother. Did I get the right card, the right gift? And it was just always a disappointment. I'll tell you, there was not a soul in Chuck E. Cheese that day. Nobody goes to Chuck E. Cheese on Mother's Day. We had so much fun. We had the run of the place. And it is one of my kids' favorite memories. And we got into this photo booth and I snuggled them all in and squeezed them all in. And, you know, it makes this little drawing, like pencil etching of it. And that is still like up in my closet. I have that up every day when I'm getting dressed. I look at that day and I'm so grateful for it. And I just realized that all of those, you know, worries, those fears, those disappointments, those feelings of inadequacy, I don't need my family to, I need to release them from the prison of trying to convince me that I'm a good mom because nobody's going to be able to do that except the Lord. That is something I'm going to have to plant the seeds and trust the Lord to bring the harvest. And so whatever the day brings, I would find grace, find gratitude, and find grit. And as my granny would say, who I just love so, so much, but I really found a lot of freedom in just thinking about the people who mothered me along the way, who I needed to. There's always something to be grateful for, always something, Sandy. And it has such powerful health benefits that I call it vitamin G. Like, it is that good. It really changes your heart and your mind. And it is possible to heal from generational brokenness.
I agree. All kinds of brokenness. In fact, mm-hmm. you know, just the fact that you had your grandmother step in, and I did read a little bit about that in your book. Mm-hmm. That's God, Jessica.
So much
He
God.
Fills, when we love Him and we're surrendered to Him, He fills up those empty holes. I can attest to that in many ways. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that's an encouragement to people listening to us today who are having all kinds of problems, you know, and this Mother's mm-hmm. Day is bringing sadness. One thing, just a practical thing that I used to do, I think I haven't done it in a long time to my detriment. It's when I had friends that wanted to have children and couldn't, were barren for some reason or circumstances, and I used to call them on Mother's Day, not for platitudes, but just to tell them I love them and I'm just love them and I'm praying for them and thank them for their friendship, whatever. But it really, I just felt that was a wonderful way to, that's like Christmas, you know, you invite people that don't have family. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a wonderful, loving thing to do for believers in Christ. But anyway, with those big lots of tips that we've mm-hmm. you've offered them today, Jessica, we should say goodbye because I've taken up a lot of your time and you have a lot of stuff to do.
So do you. And yes, that's okay, though. But this is such a blessing. What a blessing to be able to share.
We both have to pack, right?
We do.
Packing.
Okay. We do.
All right. So Jessica's book is Behind Closed Doors, and she's a great writer. She's just a great writer. I think you would all benefit. If any of you out there have a problem, you would benefit. Some of those of you that don't have no problems, it wouldn't mean anything to you. But Behind Closed Doors is the name of it. Also, you can hear her show, Dr. Nurse Mama, on AFR Talk. And with that, Jessica, thank you for all that you do. And have a great time in Africa.
Thank you so much, and happy Mother's Day, Sandy. God bless you.
Thank you. Same to you. All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
preborn makes it possible for us to have these conversations. And you all, so many of you have been faithful donors, just amazing. You are amazing to me. I would say that, you know, preborn advertises on almost all the major talk shows and podcasts. And our show performs as well as, from my understanding, most of those major podcasts. And you know why? It's because of you. It's because of you. There are fewer of you, but you give generously and you really believe in saving babies. And so thank you for that. I'm deeply grateful. I'm deeply grateful. And so for just $28, which is the cost of a dinner right now, in most places where most normal people eat, you can sponsor an ultrasound or introduce a mom to her baby for the very first time. And 100% of your donation will go towards saving those babies. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Mother of mine, how do I say all the love I feel today? Through every storm, through every mile, you held my hand, you made me smile. And when the world felt cold and wild, with every tear, with every fall, you lifted me, you gave your all. My tears and kissed my face. Through sleepless nights and dreams untold, you gave me wings, you made me bold. And when I lost my way somehow, you were there then and now.
Isn't that beautiful? Just beautiful. And it makes me think of my own mother, and I'll just say a few words about that. If any of you have read my book, God's Velvet Hammer, you read something about my mother, about her very difficult hardships growing up. I won't go into that, but I'll just say this is what I want to say about my mother. When I was a kid, I suffered from debilitating self-consciousness. I would be so self-conscious in class about something, my stomach would make a noise. I would just get into a debilitating freeze. I would actually go to the nurse's office, and my mother would pick me up. I'd make myself sick at my stomach. I couldn't go swimming. I'd go to the swimming pool and get in, wait till nobody was looking, and then run from the dressing room and jump into the pool and stay in there for 2 hours till I was just completely shriveled because I didn't want anybody to see me. I always felt, you know, everyone else was smarter, more beautiful. I really was debilitated by my lack of confidence. And my mother used to say to me over and over again, she, you know, used to read books on self-esteem. And my mother didn't come from an academic background, but she would read these articles to me. She'd tell me things she was learning. And then she would just say, Sandra Kay, you're not better than anybody else. You're not. But you're just as good. And so she did really pull me out of it. And then, of course, when I became a singer, when I was about 14 is when I performed for the first time. That changed a lot of things in my self-esteem. And my mother, in all those years of performing and singing, proms, everything, would make all of my dresses. I can remember her at my feet with a needle in her mouth, you know, and her thimble, hemming it, or doing the last final touches before I would leave for some event. Completely selfless, completely selfless. And I remember when I was a girl, my mother became a Christian when she was 36, so I was little. But I'd get up in the morning, and she had a beautiful robe, you know, nothing fancy, but just pretty. My mother had, anyway, she was a real lady. And she'd be sitting at a table and reading her Bible early in the morning, every morning. When I was a little girl, I'd see her doing that. And when she got into her 70s, she was still teaching Sunday school, and she taught the senior ladies. And I remember going in that and sitting in the back and just looking at my mother, beautifully dressed, not fancy, just very nice. And she would teach in kind of a soft voice because she has just such reverence for God. That was my mother. And then and when I had Sasha, no one was more my companion from the time she was born until she died than my mother. We were both so confused about why God would allow this to happen, this severely damaged child. And so we would search the scriptures. We would get on our knees and pray. And my mother used to come to my house, my father too, of course. My dad's part of this too, but it's Mother's Day, so I'm talking about Mother's Day. They would drive 300 miles to my home in Chicago to take care of my children as I sang and traveled when, you know, life changed a lot for me later. And I told them twice, I don't expect this. I don't expect you, but my phone is ringing off the hook and I'm getting more opportunities that I can't, I don't have to do this. I don't have to do this, and you don't have to come up here and take over the care of Sasha and later Jeremy. But they absolutely said, absolutely, we'll be here anytime you need us. And they did that for years. And my mother lifted and bathed my daughter Sasha when I was gone until she was in her 70s. At the time, I appreciated it, but I don't think then I even realized how hard that must have been for her. She bathed and fed her. My dad would help. And when my mother died, I've told this story on the air before. I'll repeat it because it's just a fitting into what I want to share with you in this Mother's Day. My mother had an aneurysm, brain aneurysm, and she was just really gone from us instantly, although she stayed in a coma for 2 weeks. And it was my sister's turn to spend the night with her. And I was home in the bed that I grew up in, the bed that I accepted Christ in, you know. It's just, and I woke up about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I had a sense of my mother, like, going up, like I still remember that since she was going up, and I just started laughing. I just started laughing, and my sister called just seconds later to tell me my mother had just passed. I had a very special mother, and I just would be remiss if I didn't share that with you. I know that's not the case for all of you, but you can be that kind of mother. As Jessica was just saying, you can change things. You can change things. Well, with that, I think we're done. I want to remind you that Preborn has made this show possible, and every show that we do, they make it possible. And they do such great work, don't they? They do just such great work, taking care of moms, providing the needs that they have, pregnant moms, and show them ultrasound so that they will not choose to take their baby's life. It's just a beautiful, very successful story. And many of you already support them faithfully. And I want to thank you for that. I just really thank you. But if you haven't given yet and you'd like to, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, thank you so much for listening to today's edition, the Mother's Day edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.